A lot of Christians don't like the Old Testament, and for good reason. First of all, it's hard to understand. And to really understand it requires a lot of background information. So if you've ever heard someone explaining something from the Old Testament and then going back into the culture and the language, and what was going on in the Mediterranean world, say in the 13th century BC, all of a sudden it makes sense. But without that background, you find yourself wandering through this labyrinth of confusing names and places and practices and values that are really foreign to who we are today and where we live. Not only that, but whatever you read of the Old Testament that you do understand, you find it to oftentimes be crude or brutal or harsh. Sometimes that harshness is attributed to God. So there's developed this idea, and it's just an idea, that the Old Testament is basically the bad news and the New Testament is the good news. And that religion in the Old Testament is like a very oppressive, terrible thing. And in the New Testament, it's a bright, shiny, wonderful thing. And it's not quite accurate. You have to remember that the people who lived in the Old Testament times not only found comfort in what they read, and beauty and truth, but they also found a spirituality that was relevant to their circumstances and their lives. And it's only foreign to us because we live someplace else in another time. But there's something in the Old Testament that is merciful, compassionate, and reveals God to us in a way that we need to see Him and understand Him. And I'm a Bible guy, so that's always where I begin, and you know, the essence of what I have to say. To me, it's sacred text, and this is how God forms our spirituality, shapes us as people. So I wanted to talk to you about something in the book of Leviticus tonight. And it's dark enough, I'm not even going to try to read it. So you're going to have to trust me on this one. But Leviticus is, you know, part of the first five books of the Bible. It's not a very interesting book. If you're reading through the Bible, practice your speed reading when you get to Leviticus. There's only two stories in 27 chapters. One little short story about a guy who blasphemes the name of God and gets executed for it. And then another story of death, the two sons of Aaron, the high priest, because they get out of line. And that's all. The rest of it, you will find instructions. Now, this is a book for the priest of Israel. And that's why it's boring to us, because it's like a policy and procedures manual. Let me see. How do you offer the burnt offering sacrifice? Well, this is how you present it. This is what you bring. This is what you do with the blood in order to accomplish whatever it is you're trying to accomplish with the sacrifice. In chapter 5 of Leviticus, there's a guilt offering, and it's for when someone is in a condition where they're not fit to go into God's presence. Now, when we think of being in a condition like that, in guilt, let's say, we think usually of something moral or ethical. But that's not what it is in Leviticus 5. It's more ceremonial. They're very alive to the purity code. And purity wasn't about moral purity. It was more about like washing your hands. Only they weren't thinking of germs or bacteria. They knew nothing about that. What they had in mind was that when people went into the presence of God, there were certain things that could spiritually affect them and cause a negative energy. God's holiness in the Old Testament is a positive energy. And it's so powerful that where it is most manifest creates a danger zone. And you don't go into that zone with any kind of impurity. You needed to go through a cleansing process so that you could be there and belong. So this is about a sacrifice for purity. And it says that when someone brought the sacrifice, that it was supposed to be a lamb that they offered to God. And a few verses down, it says, now, if they cannot afford a lamb, they can bring two turtle doves. And then another couple of verses down, it says, if their means are insufficient to bring turtle doves, then they can bring whatever the priest says they should bring. Most of us are still on the point system. That is, we think religiously about God, and we don't think in the terms that He wants us to think about Him. The point system is, if I do bad things, I get so many points against me. And if I do good things, I get so many points for me. And at the end of the day, I can bring those points and tally them up and decide whether I should pray or not before I go to sleep. Because if I've got enough bad points, I think, well, He's not going to hear me anyway, so what's the use? I'll just go to sleep. But if I have enough good points, then I can say, hey, God, you know, thanks for hanging with me today, and, you know, everything's cool, right? And whether we feel accepted by God depends on how many points we've accumulated on the good side. So we can imagine bringing our sacrifice to God. This is going to cover the bad points, you know. He provides a way to, you know, clean the list. And we all think this is wonderful because I keep getting those bad points. I feel always like I'm in the negative. And only once in a while do I feel like I've got enough good points that I've earned God's love, that He's with me, that He's going to help me now, that He's going to walk with me now, that He's going to accept me now. I finally have enough good points. But 6 days a week, I feel like I don't have enough good points. And so I feel I'm here and I'm on my own, and I have no right to go to God and say, God, help me. Or I have no right to expect God to walk with me or to communicate with me or to be in a loving relationship with me because I just don't deserve it. And I assume that every other Christian does. They're probably doing it right. They're probably saints, but, you know, not me. Now, here comes someone with their sacrifice, and they can't afford the lamb, so they can bring turtle doves. But here's another couple. They're so poor, they can't afford turtle doves. So they just go to the priest, and they say, look, I can't afford the turtle doves. Now, don't you think there are people who are thinking, you know, if you really want to be forgiven, you got to bring the lamb. You know, turtle doves and half your sins are gone. But, you know, you get what you pay for. What I'd like to do tonight is affect your thinking about yourself and God. And more than your thinking, I'd like to shape your spirit just a little bit. Shape your spiritual journey just a little bit. But this is significant enough that if you hear it, and you take this into your heart, It's going to bring you to a better place. We look at these poor people come in and they can't afford the lamb, they can't afford the turtle dove, and we just see this downward movement to accommodate the poorest people. What is God doing here? What is God doing here? Sometimes we get the impression that living for God is just too hard. Look, I've got to be patient. That's too hard. I have to be loving. I've been ripped off so many times by people I've loved. It's too hard. I have to keep caring. When caring hurts so bad, especially, you know, if it's your kids and they're messing up, it's just sometimes you can't do anything except pray and ache. Sometimes walking with God is just too hard. And I think, I can't do it. I want to be a good person. I want to be a Christian. I want to have a relationship with Jesus. But I keep failing on my end of the deal. And I'm thinking, he's not hearing my prayers. He's not with me. He's not helping me through life. I just can't do it. I'd like to be a part of the team. I can't do it. And what does God say? God says, bring what you have. Well, I don't have a lamb. God says, bring what you have. Well, I don't have the turtle doves. And God says, bring what you have. I'm going to make it work. Whatever it is, whatever you have or don't have, God says, I'm going to make this work. This is going to work. God, I can't make it happen. He says, don't worry. Don't worry. This is going to work. Because I will meet you where you are and I'll make it work. And what you don't have does not matter. I'm going to accept you and we're going to start there and it's going to work. Now, it sounds to us like God's is going to lower the bar. But that's not truth. And you must not think that or believe that because it's wrong. And the wrongness of that thought will screw you up. What's wrong with it? God's not lowering the bar. The reason that's wrong is because it devalues you. It devalues your dignity. It devalues what you are, created in the image of God. And God won't have that. He won't allow you to devalue yourself. He's not lowering the bar. So, you know, there's no standard now. Just, you know, riffraff can come. It doesn't matter. God accepts junk. That's not it. In fact, the reason that God is so intense about us and the life we live and the quality of life we live is because he knows what we are. And God always respects his image in you. He holds that in high regard. If you truly understood yourself, you would stand in awe of God that you are this spirit being that reflects his image. And God is opposed to any devaluation of you. He doesn't lower the bar. What he does is he gives the priest a sliding scale so that wealth is not an issue. You see, that's all it is. It's just, you know, some people have more than others. And those who have more, they give accordingly. God makes the money thing irrelevant because it is irrelevant. The important thing is your connect with Him. And God says, I'm going to make this work. And it doesn't matter what your problems are. It doesn't matter what your sins are, what your failures are. God says, I'm going to make this work. I want you to understand, there's nothing that can make this not work. And you say, well, yeah, but you don't know me. Well, you don't know me. If anyone can make it not work, I'm the guy who can make it not work. And God says, it's going to work. Because I'm going to make it work. Because you're too valuable to lose. And I want you. So I'm going to make it work. So whatever you have in your head, you know, from the old Bible-thumping preachers or, you know, the guys on the radio or anyone else. Oh, sorry. Are you on the radio? Yes, I realize my dad's on the radio. But it's my mom who screwed me up. Don't let anyone give you that impression, I'm not doing enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not making it. Because God meets you every morning with new mercies and He says, okay, everything's cool, everything's right, let's go into the day together. And He watches over you even when you don't pray. And He watches over you even when you forget Him. You know, that song we were singing earlier, you're dancing over me and I'm unaware of you. That's like all the time, isn't it? We don't know God's dancing. We don't know God is making things happen for us. We don't know that God is protecting us. We're unaware. We go through life asleep. The wonderful thing is once in a while we wake up, and then what we become conscious of is so beautiful, so rich, so full, that it encourages us to go on. So someone has wealth and someone doesn't have wealth, and that's not a measurement of you as a person. That's not a measurement of your value. That's not a measurement of what you're capable of doing. That's not the scorecard, and those aren't the points. Everyone comes to God, and no one is measured by what they have or don't have. Those things are accidents. Those things are incidentals. God doesn't care about those. I mean, some people succeed in life. That is, they accomplish their goals and they make money doing it. And others don't. But one person is not a better person for being a success, and another person is not a worse person for not being a success. God sees His image in everyone, and He says, I'm going to make this work. Now, that's about all I have to say tonight. Just one other thing that I think is important to remember, that when we come before God, that we don't come before rules. We don't come before a list of principles. We don't come before commandments. We're not coming to any sort of document. We're not even coming before theology or doctrines. We're coming to a person. Martin Buber, a Jewish theologian of the 20th century, wrote a book entitled I, Thou. And he said that we mostly go through life in I-it relationships. An it is an object. And we treat other people as objects. What sort of function do they fulfill for me? And these are not relationships, he says. This is not the real or the primary relationship, but the real relationship is when you stand before another and recognize them as another, such as yourself, and it is an I-you relationship, and there's a connection, and something happens there that doesn't happen in the world of I-it, that doesn't happen in the world of objects, and doesn't happen when you just relate to other people as objects. And when we come before God, that is the I-thou encounter in which the whole horizon of creation opens up to us as we stand before Him. And He says, you can't authentically stand in this I-thou relationship without being totally taken up into it, without sacrificing everything for it, without being drawn body and soul into it. And then we just stand in wonder and we say, thou, you, it's you. You know, when we're singing and there's a song and it's, you know, God does this, He does that, He does this. And then the next song is you. Can you feel the difference when you're singing? Sometimes we sing an old song that's all He, and the worship leader will change the words to you, and all of a sudden there's a difference. Because it's the language of encounter. It's the language of direct experience. I'm now before you. And somehow we have to get into that private time that we have with God. Somehow we have to get this consciousness of His presence right there so that we're saying you to Him with understanding that He is making it possible for us to say the word and to experience Him in it. And when you're in that place with God and you say you and connect, you feel it. You know it. You know it not necessarily intellectually. I mean, there might be thoughts that occur to you about it, but that's not the encounter. You know it not emotionally. A lot of times feelings come with it, but that's not the encounter. The encounter is all spirit. Your spirit and God's spirit. And that requires silence and attentiveness, because we don't know how to be in our spirit with God's spirit. We know how to think about God, and we know how to feel. We don't know how to connect spirit to spirit when there are no feelings, or the feelings are blah, or the thoughts are distracting. And usually we just give up and walk away. But those things are irrelevant to the real nature of the encounter, the I-thou encounter, in which God says, I'm making it possible. I'm making it work. And it is working. So, you have to understand something of your value to God. He's not going to let you go. You mean too much to Him. He's not going to let anyone rip you out of His hand. Jesus said, no one has taken them out of my hand, not going to let it happen because you mean too much to him. Yeah, sometimes we take our relationship with God for granted. He never does. You mean too much to him. And I would like you to begin to respect yourself as created in God's image. I was talking to a priest one time, Father John. He was in this area forever. Well, actually, he lived in Mexico for a while because the Diocese of Orange kicked him out of California because he was marching in peace rallies and stuff during the Vietnam War. And he came back an advocate for immigrant rights. Always a man of God and always a man with a social conscience. And he was telling me one time that in the Hispanic community where he worked, the parents taught their children shame. And the mothers would use shame to motivate their children. They would humiliate them. And he said you would see them, you know, when they were, as a family, walking down the street, they'd always have their heads down, too ashamed to look up and make eye contact with others because others are better and they live in shame. Our culture does this to the substance abuser, to the ex-convict. Have a felony on your record? What does that do when you go to get a job? We learn to live in shame. And I'm telling you that you're something new in Jesus Christ. And the old things have passed away. Everything's become new. This newness is dignity. This newness is value. Jesus said, Father in heaven sees even the sparrow that falls to the ground, and you are worth much more to him than many sparrows. God cares for the smallest creature, but you are worth so much more to him than that. And the new way of being in God through Jesus is to understand something about his image in you, so precious he doesn't take his eyes off of it. And he's not going to let it go. And he's going to make it work. Your faith is totally doable because God makes it happen. He makes it happen by grace every day. This invisible power that makes us better people, that makes things work out. It doesn't look like they're going to work out. Makes things work out. Every day, this grace is going from God into our lives. And all we have to do is look at the areas of our life where there's space for God's grace to work. And sometimes that's unemployment. And sometimes it's sickness or a cancer scare. Sometimes it's depression. Whatever it is, say, I'm going to allow this to be space for God to work because I really don't know what to do here. I really don't know the best road to take. And grace is wiser than I am. And grace is stronger than I am. And grace is going to work to make a difference. That's the plan. Okay, so thanks for letting me talk to you tonight and to share these things. It's my life to wake others up to life and to live more consciously. That divine presence that's with us all the time. And to be more transformed by it. And that I get to do this tonight with you is a pleasure for me. It's the fulfillment of my existence. I'd like to pray. God, we barely understand you. We barely understand anything about you. Whatever we know, if we were to compile all human knowledge of you, all the theologies of the world, all the truth ever revealed, that would be only a fraction of what you are in truth. Only the little bit that you've allowed us to know. It's a whisper. It's a particle. But our ignorance is no obstacle to faith. In fact, faith works best when we don't know. And peace is most real when it passes understanding. And joy is the fullest when it is unspeakable. When it is just held in our heart and we are in it, not producing it, not following the steps to joy, but just surrendering to it. Teach us to surrender to the grace that you extend to us every day, knowing that you treasure us, knowing that we are valuable. It's not just that we're valuable to you, like we are to mom. It's that we are valuable because you made us so. Help us to recognize that value in each other and to hold that in reverence. And to realize that when we say I, you to someone else, that you that they become is not only that person, but Jesus also, who is in the least of his brothers and sisters, and that the way we treat them is our actual behavior with you. God, I pray that your grace would wake us up in the morning with hope, and whatever lies ahead of us in that day, that we're able to imagine your grace at work in the lives of people that we have to talk to, that we get to talk to, that we look forward to talking to, in the circumstances that we have to face and resolve, and just in the day-to-day getting through this life. Help us to be better people, Lord. Because ultimately, it doesn't matter what we know or what we say. What matters the most to this world and our time here is that we are good people. So make us good people, Father. And then out of that goodness, show your love to the world through Jesus. Amen. Thanks.